In case you didn't notice, we finished the effort chapter. So since everyone has effort, now we'll go on to the next perfection, which is what? Meditation. Okay. And I'll just write the name of it here. Samten. Say Samten. Samten. There are many words in Tibetan and in Sanskrit for meditation. Many, many different words. This is the name that they give to the perfection of meditation, Samten. It's hard to translate them all differently and to get the different flavors of each one. I'm not going to try to get into that tonight. That would take like a half hour and take us off the subject. It's in the fifth course, if you're interested. We went through all the different words for meditation, and Samten in this case means the perfection of meditation. And I'm going to read you some verses in Tibetan, and then I'll explain them roughly. We didn't have time to finish the translation. We've been working very hard and staying up late hours, and we're caught up to the last class. So you'll get that after the class tonight. But it's just a lot to do, and a lot of people are working very hard on it, but we just couldn't catch up. So you're going to get it. You don't get Hector, you get me. Okay. I'll just read it to you for the sound. You get the blessing of the sound, and then I'll explain it. Deda tsundru kine ni, yini tingazim la shak, semni namba yengbi mi, nyomong chewe tana ne, ludan semni emba yi, namba yangwa minjungo. Deda tsundru kine ni means, now that you all have the perfection of effort, okay, yini tingazim la shak, you should put your mind into one-pointed concentration, okay? I used to wonder what one-pointed meant, you know? Like, I was thinking about Coneheads on Saturday Night Live, you know? Like, one-pointed must mean that your head is kind of pointy, you know? And I finally saw in some scripture, it said, yul chikla. Semsei chik means yul chikla. It means, one-pointed concentration means simply to be one-minded, to have one-mindedness. So, you know, like my boss has tingenzin. He's one-mindedly focused towards money. And that is tingenzin. You don't have to be a Buddhist to have tingenzin. Baseball players have tingenzin. You know, if you watch a good baseball player and they do the slow-mo of the ball coming into the batter and the guy's standing there, and if you watch his eyes, sometimes they close up on his eyes and the eyeballs get, you know, everything opens up wider, and like the concentration is very intense, and it has to be, to get a Dwight Gooden 95-mile-an-hour fastball, your concentration has to be intense. And it is intense, and that is concentration. It's not Buddhist concentration. So we distinguish between Buddhist concentration and other concentration. They do have concentration. Yin yin ting zin la shak. So Master Shantideva says, get concentration. He compares the mental afflictions to some kind of a horrible monster, like a bear, like a grizzly bear, okay? And he says, picture the mental afflictions as having their mouth open. And he says, a person who is allowing their mind to wander, if a person doesn't have one-pointedness, it's as if their head was in the between the grizzly bear's teeth. The word chewa means fangs, like that long. So he says, a person who's allowing their mind to wander has their head between this, inside the mouth of this creature. And the connotation is that the creature is about to close his mouth. You know, like you're not dead yet, but you've got your head nicely fit between his fangs like that. And he's about to just crush you. And he is the mental afflictions. So he's talking in terms of mental afflictions. So his introduction, his first words about meditation are, if you allow your mind to wander around, then your head is right there between the fangs of some monster like a grizzly bear, and he's about to kill you. Okay, what does that mean? And he goes into two different meanings of that. Okay, he talks about two functions of meditation, and I think through the whole chapter you'll see that he's really talking about two different kinds of meditation, and that ultimately they're connected together. One is, if you don't keep your mind in a meditative state, you will start to have mental afflictions. Mental afflictions will destroy you, like a big animal. You know, as long as you don't have your mind in a meditative state, then mental afflictions will crush you, and they will kill you. And he's connecting that kind of meditative state to mental afflictions. And if you read through the whole chapter, it becomes obvious that he's talking about a state of mind that you have to have all day long. And that's important, okay? He's talking about meditation as a state of mind that you maintain from the time you wake up to the time you go to sleep. And if you're practicing Nyanjoma, then even in the sleeping hours, okay? So he's saying you have to look upon meditation not as something you do with your legs folded. In fact, I was looking through the whole chapter. He never talks about how to get down on your cushion and how to fold your legs. And he never gets to that. He never mentions it at all. He goes through a whole chapter emphasizing the meditative state of mind. Okay, and we'll talk about that. So he's talking about the perfection of meditation as more of a kind of meditative state of mind as you walk through your whole day. I used to call it office meditation. Then he also gets into deep meditation. He starts to explain deep meditation. And he's distinguishing between the functions of the two. And we'll get into that. If you think about general meditative state of mind, which you can have all day long, that's very useful so that you don't get mental afflictions. You know, if your mind is in this very good place between the two extremes, what are the two extremes? Classic, okay, when they talk about meditative equipoise, you know, nyam sha. Nyam means in an even state between two different extremes. Yeah, one is agitation. Okay, one extreme is agitation. What is agitation? It's very simple. It's not very complicated. Maybe it's a bad translation. It just means thinking about a lot of stuff. That's all. So on one hand, there's this extreme of your mind going from object to object, you know, flipping around. You know, you see something, you get something to eat, food is very bad, you see something you like. New York is probably the hardest place in the world, or one of the hardest places in the world, to avoid this. So on one hand, you have your mind skipping from object to object, desire objects. You know, colors, smells, shapes, touches, food, and your mind is skipping between and jumping between them. What projects you have to do, what work you have to do. And that's called gopa. In Tibetan For example, the word for a chimpanzee, you know, is mirgut. You know, it's a human gupa. So gupa means that. You can remember that. Gupa means your mind jumping around to different objects. And on the other hand is chingwa. And chingwa is dullness. It's how you feel after a big meal. Try to meditate after two pieces of Two Boots pizza. You know, I did it today. It was really good. You know, go out and have two pieces of some really good pizza. And then sit down right away and try to meditate. It's a joke. You know, and you'll see what chingwa is. It's not just like sleepiness or dullness or some kind of, you know, very subtle meditative state. It's just plain old, stupid, lazy mind that comes from eating or being sleepy. By the way, try to meditate with no sleep. It's the same thing. You know, if you want to achieve chingwa, if you want to know what chingwa looks like, you know, don't get enough sleep and then try to meditate. Or eat something that's too much for a person and then try to meditate right after that. And you'll see what chingwa is. So he's saying the whole object throughout your life, throughout your day, is to keep your mind focused in between. I like to call it bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. You know, it's a mind which is clear, bright, happy, focused, interested. You know, it's avoiding this extreme and it's avoiding this extreme. And it's just like when you're really into something. I like to say it's when you're watching a good movie or you're reading a good book or if Sal knows, if you're playing a good song. And if you're really into the music, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen that, you just start to slobber. I mean, because you forget to close your mouth. And when you're into a good movie, you're on the edge of your seat, you know. Or I went to see some flamenco thing with some of the students here, and they're all like on the edge of their seat, you know. And that's meditative concentration. It's between thinking about too many things and being stupid or lazy or dull on the other hand, okay? And it's just this kind of, and you have it when you're interested in something. And that's it. That's the state of mind you want. And it's like, you know, it's like that. It's just bright, happy, focused, and you can have it all day long. The trick is how do you stay there all day long? And then how do you get into deep meditation? So Master Shantideva is talking about both. That's going to be the subject of the chapter. There's going to be this one theme of how to stay in that state of mind from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed. Now, how do you stay in this bright, happy, focused, intelligent state of mind? And then, on the other hand, what are the conditions under which you should go into deep meditation? You know, suppose you want to go into really deep meditation. And if you think about it, the first kind of meditative state of mind, which is the one you take around all day, keeps you out of the mental affliction's mouth. Okay? It keeps you away from getting angry, jealous. You know, if your mind is clear and focused and happy, you won't tend to get angry or jealous. If you haven't had enough sleep, if you're overworking on your computer, if you just ate too much pizza and ice cream, then your mind is very fertile field for mental affliction. It's like you're setting yourself up for a mental affliction. Like it's not mental affliction yet, but you're just like getting a nice chair ready for mental affliction, you know, like you're saying, you're going to invite mental affliction into your mind because you're already acting sloppy. Your mind is already sloppy. You ate too much, you got into some desire object too much, and you're just setting your mind up to have a mental affliction. So he's talking about avoiding that on the one hand. And that's the kind of meditative state that you have to maintain all day. If on the other hand you're overworking, you have too many projects going on, you're letting your eyes wander around the street, you're picking up magazines, you're surfing the channels on the TV or the internet, and that's gupa. And that's setting your mind up for mental affliction. If you keep doing that, then you're going to have a mental affliction within 10 minutes or 15 minutes. And you can't protect yourself because your mind's not clear, it's not focused. So he's talking about that as one big theme. And then he gets into another theme of deep meditation, you know, using deep states of meditation. And that's what you classically think of when you think of the perfection of meditation. How does that relate to mental affliction? We're going to talk about it today, but the main thing is You need to be able to get into a deep state of meditation to see emptiness directly. You must be able to get into a deep state of meditation to see emptiness directly. And we're going to describe that state of meditation, and we're going to start working on it. And then you can see emptiness. When you see emptiness, you've destroyed the basis of the mental afflictions. You've destroyed the roots of the mental afflictions. Okay? So there's two kinds of meditation, and they are destroying mental afflictions in two different ways. The first kind of meditative state of mind that you have from morning up to evening, and you have it mostly at work, is like prophylactic. It's preventing mental afflictions from coming. It's like saying, I'm going to put myself in a place where it's hard for me to get a mental affliction. But the other kind of meditation, deep states of meditation focused on profound objects like dependent origination or emptiness, is going to rip the very foundation of the mental afflictions out, and then you'll destroy them completely. So you need meditation to do both. You need both states of meditation, one to protect yourself from mental afflictions moment to moment during your day, and you need the other one to eventually rip out the foundations of the mental afflictions, which is to see things as self-existent. It's to misunderstand reality. And you need both. You need meditation for both. So those are the two themes that are going to be going throughout this chapter. Okay. We'll go on to the next verse. By the way, he says, Lu dan sem ni wenba yi, namba yang wa min jung o. If you can, wenba. Wenba means, sometimes in Tibetan it's pronounced wenba. See wenba? Wenba? Okay, and sometimes it's pronounced emba. Okay, depends on what part of Tibet you're from. Wenba means, it's a difficult word, and it means isolation. Isolation. And Master Shantideva says in the opening verse, in order to avoid distraction, you must achieve isolation. Okay, now what does isolation mean? He says physical and mental isolation. Okay, physical and mental. Physical, as he's going to describe, is isolating yourself from two things. I mean, isolating yourself physically from the world. Okay? And that means going on retreat, basically, or entering a monastery, which is, you know, the required 10 miles from the nearest town. Physical isolation. You know, get out of the physical environment that contributes to your mental afflictions. Isolate yourself. Go to a place that is isolated. Like go out in the woods. Go to God Style for Nancy Karen's Lam Rim retreat this weekend. Isolate yourself. Talk to her. No, anyway. Get yourself out of the city physically. Get yourself out of physical distraction. That's the first kind of isolation. And that's more required for the deep meditation type. Because for the other one, you need to be in an office. Okay? To achieve a meditative state of mind all day long, a base state of meditation, it's achieved in a state of an office or everyday life. To achieve deep meditation required to see emptiness, you should isolate yourself physically. You should get out of the kind of place that's distracting physically. It's very difficult to reach that state of meditation in New York City in a normal life. It's probably possible. It's very difficult. Okay? Mental isolation is much more difficult and much more beneficial. And that's where, oh, by the way, the other physical isolation, which he'll talk about, is isolating yourself from the social environment that ruins your meditation. And that means people around you who don't support meditation, meaning don't hang out with people that are going to ruin your meditative state of mind. And the real demons here, as the Lam Rim says, are not going to come to you with horns and forked tails, you know. They're going to be your friends who say, the real demons are the ones who come over and talk uselessly for an hour or two or three. You know, this is social distraction. And social isolation means you just politely excuse yourself, you know. All sorts of excuses you can make. You know, like, I have to go to the bathroom, or you know, I have a TV show I want to watch, you know, and just excuse yourself. That's social isolation. Master Shantideva is going to talk a lot about not hanging out with people who are going to be distracting to you. That doesn't mean you shouldn't be compassionate to them. It doesn't mean you shouldn't be friendly with people. It doesn't mean you shouldn't have social, go out socially with people and get to know them, especially your fellow students and stuff. What it means is don't put yourself in a situation which is going to be so distracting that it'll probably ruin your meditation. And I would say one good long talk about gossiping even about Dharma subjects. You know, did you hear about this monk? Did you hear about this thing? And that's another kind of distraction. He says you must achieve social isolation. And then finally, mental isolation, which is the most important one. You know, you have to gain the ability mentally to withdraw from the things going on around you and concentrate. You know, you have to gain the ability mentally to back off of all the distractions within your own mind. And they may still be going on around you, but you have to gain the ability to go back to the core of your mind and park there and not be distracted and just concentrate and come within. Come inside, withdraw yourself from the sense objects, sit down and concentrate. And he's going to talk about all those kinds of concentration and all those kinds of wemba, okay, isolation. Okay, we'll go to the next one. He tries to lay out the causes of distraction. Okay, he tries to lay out the causes of that ruin our ability to meditate, and he divides them into inner and outer. Okay, inner and outer causes. Say Dakdang, Dakya, Shambhala, Tene, Nang, Semchen, La, Chakpa. Okay, now he's giving the causes for distraction, which is inner. Okay, inner distraction. And we'll talk about outer distraction later. And the main cause is some kind of attachment. The whole chapter, or much of this chapter, especially the first half, is going to focus on how much attachment ruins your meditation. The emotion of attachment, how much it ruins your meditation. You're attached to sense objects, you're attached to friends and relatives, you're attached to yourself. Okay? And here he talks about the causes of inner attachment. What causes attachment to yourself, which is perhaps the worst distraction for someone trying to meditate? You know, what is the attraction to myself or selfishness that so much harms my meditation? It creates such attachment to the world. It's a kind of attachment to the world. Attachment to me is a kind of attachment to the world, and it ruins your meditation. It hurts your meditation. So first he's talking about the causes or the source of attachment to yourself. Okay? And it's that attachment. You are one part of the world to which you're attached. The more you're attached to the world, the less you can meditate, because you can't achieve isolation. Okay? You cannot focus your mind inward if it's glued to other objects. You know, it will not release from the other objects until you can release it from the other objects, like food, sex, lots of thoughts about other projects, you know, and even your concept of yourself. Until you can withdraw from all those, you won't be able to meditate. Okay? So, what causes an attachment inward? What causes your inward attachment? He says dark. Dark means the self nature of me. Okay? The self nature of Michael, the self nature of Tessie, the self nature of Michael Wick, whatever. But an attachment to that thing being self-existent. Okay? A belief that that thing is self-existent. A belief that that thing exists out there on its own, independent of my projections. Okay? That thing, by the way, doesn't even exist. You know, that thing never existed, never will exist. And as soon as you understand that, you won't have it anymore. Because all you have to do is see that it doesn't exist, and you won't get attached to it. Does Marvin exist? Yes. Why? He works at a bank or whatever. He does things. He breathes. You know, he talks. He shaves himself every morning in the mirror. There's somebody there. He exists, obviously exists. Does the self nature of Marvin exist? You know, does a self-existent Marvin exist? Does a Marvin exist which does not depend on my own karma and my projections? No, that Marvin doesn't exist. But as long as I think that it does, meaning for me, as long as I think that I'm self-existent, I cannot meditate. I will have desire, and that desire will ruin my meditation. Okay, and that's dark. Dakir means me and mine. Daktan dakir means me and mine. Mine means my hand, my arm, my head, my good looks, okay, my strength, my health. Okay, these are all mine. Okay, so me and mine. Me and mine, Shemba. Shemba means to believe in a self-existent me or mine. Okay? To believe that there exists a self-existent me or mine. De la tene, and because of that, due to that, de la tene means due to that. Nung means inside you. Semten la means to the person, meaning you. Chakpa, you get attachment. Okay, and it ruins your meditation. Okay? So the first thing you have to avoid if you want to meditate properly is attachment to number one. Okay? And that's an inner focus. It's focusing on me and my thing, me. Okay? And that's actually, which meditation is going to help destroy that one? The daily, you know, what I call office meditation, or is it going to be what I should call maybe retreat meditation? It's the retreat meditation, okay? It's the deep state of meditation that you really have to be out in Arizona or something to really get into it for a month. Or, you know, it takes about 2 weeks to get near to that state of meditation. If you never meditate more than 2 weeks straight, you will never reach that and you'll never know what it was like. Okay? It takes like that long to start, to reach a point where you're close to it. And this is more talking about that. You know, you have to have that kind of meditation if you're going to hurt this kind of attachment. Okay? Which means you have to start doing, it should be a goal of this organization that everyone here is regularly doing long retreats twice a year or something. I mean, I would put it up as a goal, as much as the classes or the correspondence courses or anything else that we do. Serving Rinpoche, it should be a goal of this organization that each person sitting here during the length of a year can do two meditation retreats of about a month each. And we're trying to build the cabins and all that. There's a group of people working on that. And it should be like that. You should think of it as part of your spiritual goals that you have to be able to reach this point. And he's going to talk about it. Okay, it should be part of your life's goals that you do that. Okay, you're going to have to adjust your other part of your life to that, and not vice versa. What causes the other kind of distraction? What's the other kind of attachment that ruins your daily meditation? Okay.
Say chi, nyepa dang, siksu chepa. I'm sorry, kurti, siksu chepa, sogla, sepa.
Okay, chi means out, on the outside. We just finished on the inside. On the inside, what's destroying your meditation is a belief that you are self-existent. That's more serious. That's the root of all evil. And then on the outside, what ruins your meditation is an attraction to
nyepa.
Nyepa means money, getting things, clothes, food, house, car, career. Okay? By the way, it's not bad to have a house, car, career, and clothes. You just have to, if you want to have them, you have to use them wisely. You know? They can be very useful. The Dalai Lama was the richest man in Tibet, and he used his money well, very well. So it's not wrong or bad to have them, but it's wrong or bad to waste your life to get them and be distracted and hurt yourself chasing after them. Okay, there's a difference. Okay, it's fine to have them, and then you can use them for something wonderful. But to waste your life running after them and thinking that they're self-existent and doing bad things to get them, therefore, is just insanity. Okay? So qi means outward. Nyepa means material wealth. Okay? Dung means an. Kurti means the opinions of others, you know. A lot of what motivates... I was talking to a headhunter yesterday, or a career advisor guy or something like that, and he was saying that in his experience after 30 years of helping middle-aged executives find jobs, he said people are more out after the honor than the money. You know, people... If you give them a vice president title, you can pay them like 30% less and they don't care. You know, I mean, people are out after the name or out after the respect that other people give them or the, what do you call it, the confirmation they get from the world that they are good people and important people. You know, that everyone thinks they're somebody important and that a lot of times that's worth more than the money to people, is the approval of the world. And that's another distraction. Does it mean that you should ignore other people's opinions? No. It just means that you shouldn't waste your life struggling after a title so that somebody will admire you, which you are going to lose anyway. Okay? Tsiksu Chepa means, again, fame, the praise of others. Tsiksu Chepa means literally verses of praise, odes of praise. And that's another way to ruin your meditation, is to be overly concerned with getting famous or having other people praise you. We're going to read a verse later that says, well, remember, when we get to it, it's kind of cool, so I won't tell you yet. And then sok means etc. La sepa means to be attached to those things. Sepa means to be attached to those things. If you want to ruin your meditation, get distracted by the pursuit of money, fame, or other people's approval. Okay? And that will ruin your life. Okay? That will ruin your meditation. Next, Shantideva says, Shine rabdu dembe hatong ki nyomo nambar jombar she chen ne tomar shine tsel cha teyang ni jikten chapa mela ngunge drup. Shine rabdu dembe hatong ki means you must reach a point where you combine the highest form of meditation and the highest form of wisdom. Okay? In Tibetan, they're called Shine and Hlaktong.
I'll spell it. In Sanskrit, the Shine is called Shamanta.
Sanskrit has a aspirated dental and an unaspirated dental. So in transcription, you have to write T or TH. But when you write the sound, it's not a TH, because in English that's pha, and it's not pha. So it's say shamata. Shamata. And I've seen it shamanta, or you know, anyway.
Hlaktong is vipassana. In Pali, it's corrupted to vipassana, or vipassana.
The Pali scholars would say it's corrupted in the Sanskrit. It probably doesn't matter. The highest form or state of meditation, the deepest state of meditation you can reach, is called shamatha. Shi means peace, and ne means to stay. So it's been translated as calm abiding. I hate that translation. It has nothing to do with being calm. It's a state of peace between those two extremes of being too jumping around too much or being too dull. And it just means that your mind is in a very deep state of peace. In fact, I feel so strongly about all the weird words that are going around. I'm going to give you the definition from Scripture. And you can make up your own word. Okay? But then you will know what it really is. Because there's a lot of misinformation about these two ideas. Okay? I call it Dharma rumors. Okay? So I like to call shamatha quietude or meditative quietude, meaning a state of quiet between being dumbed out, dulled out, and being, what do you call, hyper. You could, between hyper and dumb, okay? Between hyper and dull.
All right. And Hlaktong, Hlak means special, Tong means to see.
I translated it special vision. I'm not trying to sell those translations. I think there's probably about 10 good translations. There's obviously no English word to cover them because we don't know them. We don't know what they are. Okay. Anyway, just so you know what I'm talking about, when I say quietude, I'm talking about shamatha, which is the highest state of meditation. And when I say special vision or something like that, I'm talking about vipassana, which is the highest form of wisdom. Okay. It's a very high form of wisdom. The subject of the last subject we'll cover this year will be the chapter on wisdom, which is very profound and very difficult. That'll be the chapter on vipassana. We'll be talking about vipassana. This chapter that we're on now, we're talking partly about shamatha. Remember, we're talking about office meditation, which is not shamatha. But we're also talking about that deep level of meditation which you must be able to reach in order to what? In order to see emptiness directly. You must be on that platform to see emptiness directly. That is the primary and perhaps the only important use of meditation, of deep meditation. You want to reach a point where you can see emptiness directly. And then your suffering, all samsara for you begins to end at that point. When you reach the point of seeing, the path of seeing, if you can reach this state of meditation and see emptiness directly, then you can say your suffering is going to end. You're called a stream enterer because now you're on a track which has an end. You know, within 7 lifetimes typically, or within that lifetime, you will finish all your suffering. And that's the purpose to study meditation. I mean, that's the primary purpose. It's not to be calm in this life. What are you going to be, calm until they take you to the nursing home? And calm till they cut your guts out when you get cancer? You know, what's the use of being calm? If you think about it, calmness is inappropriate. You know, life is very violent and very bad. And calmness is it's weird to be calm when you're in the middle of that kind of terrible suffering. And when you have nothing to look forward to but death and disease and old age, what are you going to be calm about it? You know, that's not the point of meditation. The main point of meditation is to see emptiness directly. On the day you see emptiness directly, your suffering begins to stop clearly, purposely, and you don't have any major problems after that. And you will become enlightened. And you will reach a Buddha paradise, and none of this will mean anything anymore to you. And that's the point of meditation. It's not to get calm or what's to be calm about? Watch your breath. Watch it while it stops. You know, you know, it's crazy. That's crazy. That's as bad as going to work and trying to make $100,000. It's the same thing. You know, you're just counting time until you die. You know, that's not the goal. The goal is to reach a deep state of meditation, see emptiness directly, that stops your suffering. Your body will change, your mind will change, your world will change, and you don't have to be like this anymore. And that's the point of meditation. Okay? I'm going to define for you shamatha and vipassana. There's so much misinformation about it that we're going to take this straight out of a scripture, and you have to memorize it. And I'm not, I would be breaking a vow if I criticized the groups that call vipassana wisdom or knowledge or something like that. The groups that call vipassana meditation. That's not why I'm doing this, okay? That's not the point. Those groups are fantastic. They have excellent programs. They turn out excellent people. They do excellent compassion meditation, and those are fantastic. So I'm just saying that you should know the real, you know, the classical meaning of the thing so that you can achieve your own goals. Okay? And here they are. First, the definition of shamatha. Rangi. Wake up, Rangi. Mikpala. Sechiktu. Nyambar shakpe. Sorry. Nyambar shak. Topki. Shinjang. Ki. Dewa. Kepar chen, ki, simbe, tingenzin. Okay. Rangi mikpa la means towards its object. You know, like if you're focused, if you're visualizing a Buddha image in your mind or a Jetsonkapa image, that would be Rangi Mikpala. And in the Buddhist tradition of, you know, in Buddhism, that's an internal object. It has to be an object of the consciousness of the mind and not of the sense objects. Okay? Jetsonkapa goes into a very long spiel about that in his Lam Rim Chemo. He says there are countries, like, I don't know, in China, where they would practice staring at something to develop meditation. And he goes into a long description of why that's not correct. He says, it's Rangi Mikpala means it has to be a mental image. You know, like you can go look at a picture of Shakyamuni Buddha and get everything straight. And then you go close the door and go into your meditation and sit down. But then when you visualize, it's a visual, it's a mental consciousness. He's very adamant about it. You don't sit there and stare at a picture of Shakyamuni or something like that. Okay? He goes into a long thing about it. Rangi Mikpala, towards the particular object of focus. Tse Chiktu means one-pointed, which means what? One object. Okay? If it's money, stick to money. You know, don't do girls, cars, or food. You know? Sechik. Sechik. Dingenzin is defined as Sechik Bisim. You know, one-pointed concentration. By the power of that thing. By force of that. Through the force of that. Xinjiang. Xinjiang is a very difficult word to translate. Xin means very much. Jiang means agile or... It's the agility which results from practicing something over and over again. Like if you're a dancer and you practice the same steps over and over again, you get jiang about it, xinjiang. If you're in a circus and doing tightrope, you get xinjiang about it if you do it over and over again. If you're a meditator and you keep focusing on the same object well, you get jiang about it. Jiang means you get very, very good at it. It becomes second nature. Okay, Xinjiang. When Rinpoche explains the word Xinjiang, he always talks about gymnasts. You know, Olympic gymnasts who are just, you know, they can do anything. And Xinjiang also implies a kind of control over your body and mind. Xinjiang means you can sit down on your meditation cushion and talk to your mind and say, I want you to stay on this object for 2 hours. I'll see you later. You know, and you leave. You know, I mean, the mind is there. In the mind, you have complete self-command, it's called. Self-control. You can tell your mind, we're going to meditate about a Buddha image today. Get it straight, got it? Stay there for 2 hours. I'll check in with you later. And the mind just stays there. And the same with your body. Xinjiang about your body means you can sit down your body in meditation. You can go into a very good, proper posture. And you can say, okay, don't move for 2 hours. I'll be back later. You know, and the body just obeys you. It's where your mind and your body obey you. It's called Xinjiang. Xinjiang has a certain effect on you. It's called Dewa Kepa Chen. And that's the next section. Okay? Dewa Kepa Chen means... Oh, by the way, so Xinjiang can be mental or physical. Okay? Mental Xinjiang is you can command your mind to stay on that object for 2 hours and it will obey because it's done it so many times before. You know, it's just done it. So Jiang means... I've done it so many times that I can do it. Physical Xinjiang, you can command your body to stay still for 2 hours and it will stay still and it will obey you. Okay? And from Xinjiang, you get Dewa Kepa Chen. Dewa Kepa Chen means some extraordinary... Kepa Chen means extraordinary. Dewa means good feeling. Okay? You get a rush. When you get good at meditating, you will feel some kind of physical... well-being and sometimes physical, I don't know how to say, but you'll just feel great physically. And then mentally you feel great. And that's Xinjiang Ki Dewa Kepa Chen. Dewa Kepa Chen means once you reach that point in your meditation, you get a very, very pleasant feeling of body and mind. And that's why they had to make a bodhisattva vow about what? Do not consider that an important spiritual achievement. That's what the wording is. In the vow. Don't get distracted by that. That's not the goal. Okay? Doesn't matter if you feel good and your mind feels good if you're going to end up with cancer in a nursing home somewhere. Okay? It's not the goal. And a lot of Buddhist schools, I believe, it seems to be that they get distracted by that and that becomes the goal. You know, that's not a goal. If your body is still getting old and if you still are eligible for death, then that doesn't count for anything. You know, you've got to use it for something. It's not the goal. It's a means to reach the goal. Okay? And as you get better at meditating, your mind will feel great and your body will feel great and say, that's nice, I'm going on to see emptiness. You know, that's the real golden fleece, right? Whatever. What do they call it? I don't know. I mean, the real prize. You know, anyway. Kepa Chenge, Simba means you're full of that. Simba means it just imbues you. Okay? Simba means it's like an aroma that permeates you all the time. Okay? Simba is a very difficult word to translate. Okay? Imbued by, filled by. Okay, by the way, I've tried to translate this into English. It's not in your reading, even if you had gotten your reading. So I'm going to have somebody write it out during the break, okay? And I'll put it up in English, all right? Because you have to memorize the definition. Simbe, tingenzin. Tingenzin means defined as the ability to focus on one-pointedly, one-pointed concentration, meaning one object, okay? If it's going to be food, concentrate on food. Don't get distracted by music or TV or anything else. You know, that's one point in this. Alright? Okay. You guys want Vipassana or you want food? Let's take a break. Let's take a break. Come back in 10 minutes, okay? We got a lot to do, so try to come back in 10 minutes. Okay? Here's the definition of Vipassana, and then I'll give you the English translation of the other one. Okay, this is the definition of Vipassana. Which I think has come to be connected mentally in the West with different kinds of meditation. And it's actually something quite different. You see the definition. Rangiten means it must have as its foundation. Okay, it rests upon. Okay, Rangiten means it rests upon Shine. What's Shine? Shamatha. Okay, it rests upon Shamatha. You must get shamatha first. There's a big debate in the Lamrim, in the Gomrim, and other texts about which one do you get first? You know, do you get shamatha first or do you get vipassana first? You have to go after shamatha first. First you develop the ability to meditate very, very deeply. And only later, you, based on that, you get a wisdom which can perceive emptiness. Okay? You have to have the platform first to stand on, the foundation. So Rangiten means its basis, Shine, Shamatha, quietude. Latene, based on that, Latene, Rangi Mikpala, the object towards which it is focused. Okay? By the way, classical meditation, it could be three different types of objects, right? In Jogom, or fixed meditation, it would be like a picture of the Buddha or something like that. In Chegom, it would be a problem that you're trying to solve, a spiritual problem that you're trying to solve in meditation. And in Shargom, it would be a typical series of steps through which you take your mind, like mental exercises. You take your mind through the outline of the Lamrim over and over, for example. Those are all Rangi Mikpa. Those are all the object on which this meditation is focused. Mikpa La, Sosoche. Sosoche means it analyzes that object. Okay? It analyzes that object. If, for example, you are meditating on emptiness, you might go through four stages of sosoche, four stages of analysis. In stage one, by the way, this is Kedubje's method, very powerful. In stage one, you go through visualizing the object as you normally do during your day. In stage two, you try to visualize it as self-existent, even though it could never be. In stage three, you try to visualize it as dependently originating, which is the way it really exists and which you never understood before. And in stage four, you try to imagine what it would be like if the self-existent aspect wasn't there at all. And then you reach emptiness. But those are sosoche. Sosoche means you go through four different modes of examining the true nature of this object.
Okay. Ki, Shinjang ki dewa.
Shinjang means that very pleasant state of being very, very much in command of your body and mind. You sit there for 2 hours. You focus on that for 2 hours. Shinjang. Shinjang ki dewa kyapa chen means that extraordinary good feeling you get when you can able to do that. When you've practiced meditation over and over and over again, and you're finally able to do that, you get this very, very pleasant feeling in your body and this very, very pleasant feeling in your mind. Okay? And you have to build up to that. Master Shantideva will say over and over and over again, anyone can do it if you build up gradually. And if you make these big efforts at the first day, you're gonna poop out. So just build up very slowly, very gradually, and you'll be able to do it for 2 hours. If you do it every day, build up very slowly, very gradually, you'll be able to meditate for 2 hours and command your body and mind to sit there. And he says, any other way will never work. You know, very heartfelt, great efforts every 3 days, you know, for an hour and a half or 2 hours, in which you're like, you know, it doesn't work that way. Every single day, at the same time, build it up slowly. Start with 5 minutes. Get to 6 minutes. Build up to 7 minutes. You know, and then you will be able to meditate for 3 hours straight. Perfectly. But you have to do it that way.
Kepa Tenki.
Simbe means just imbued, covered with this kind of a bliss of body and mind. Shirab. Shirab means wisdom. Okay? That's the definition of vipassana. Okay? Which Margie's almost finished writing. Okay. We'll go on. I'm going to throw up one more thing. So that's what vipassana is, a high state of meditation in which you are analyzing that object and understanding its emptiness. And it must be based on shamatha. Shamatha is a tool and not a goal. Shamatha is ability to meditate deeply, which you must get if you're going to see emptiness directly. Okay.
There's a very, very specific meditative state that you have to be able to reach in order to see emptiness directly.
If you do not see emptiness directly, you can never stop your mental afflictions permanently. Impossible. If you never see emptiness directly in this life, you must suffer more. You must continue to suffer. Until the day you see emptiness directly, it's absolutely certain that you will continue to suffer mentally and physically. And no question, if you want to know if you're going to have any pain going on, have you seen emptiness directly? Because if you haven't, you are doomed to pain. You must have pain. And if you do see emptiness directly, you get out of that pain. So it's very important. You must be able to reach a certain state of meditation. In the Abhidhamma Kosha, it describes that state. And I'm going to write the name of that state, okay?
It's very short, okay?
Say something. Tangbu. Nyerdo. Michokme. Something. Tangbu. Nyerdo. Michokme.
A lot of the viewpoints of the Abhidharma school are not accepted by the higher schools. But this one is, okay?
You can take this one to the bank, okay? Samten, in this case, does not refer to the perfection of meditation. It refers to one of the four dhyani levels, okay? These are four levels of meditation that if you are able to reach them in this life, and if you practice them constantly in this life, you will be born into another realm. And it's a realm of suffering. And it's like a little paradise realm, a little temporary paradise realm called the form realm. Okay? If you want to get to the form realm, this is how you do it. We consider the form realm a big waste of time because there's not much dharma there. Why? People are having too good of a time. And you're just kind of like it's as if you were taking heroin for your whole life. To live in that realm as a karmic result of doing this kind of meditation for your whole life, frequently, is like a waste of time because you burn up all your good karma and then you drop to a lower realm. This is like a flow chart, and it's considered a very bad rebirth. This is the desire realm. It's very good for Dharma practice because you have a very good mix of suffering and intelligence. You know, but form realm is like considered a terrible mistake. And you get there by doing a useless meditation frequently for your whole life. Like if you just focused on your breath as the only content of your meditation, or if you just tried to blank out your mind and not have any thoughts, or if you just tried to follow your thoughts, as a practice over many years, that would lead you to a birth in the form realm. And that's what we call meditation without meaningful content. And that leads to that kind of rebirth. And in you know, classical Buddhism, this is considered a real serious mistake. And I'm afraid that many people maybe are doing this. You know, 99.9% of people don't have any interest in meditation. The 0.1% of people are meditating on nothing. And that's a serious mistake. And at least that is the only cause to be born into this realm, and it's a wasted life.
Okay.
Why do you get born into such a pleasant realm? Because you have taken Samten Gidomba. You have taken the vowed morality of Samten. What's that mean? It means if you're sitting there meditating on your breath or emptying your mind, you can't get angry, you can't commit adultery, you can't lie. And so automatically you get a nice result, which is a nice rebirth, just because of default, by default. Because you weren't walking around New York City and collecting all these bad deeds actively, which is what we're doing. So, you know, based on that, you get a good rebirth, but it doesn't last and it has no meaning. It's a very great suffering towards the end of that rebirth. It's considered a mistake, a serious mistake in Buddhist practice. And I'm afraid it's pretty common in this country.
Okay.
So Samden means, in this case, what we call a causal meditative state in the form realm. It will, if you did it over and over again, as alone, with no content, it would lead you to be born into the form realm.
Okay. The form realm has what we call four levels. Okay, so Samden Dhammo means first meditative level, first concentration level. Nirdok
is a very specific concept, very difficult concept in the books on meditation. And what it means is, it's called the preliminary stage, okay? So we're talking about reaching the preliminary stage of the first concentration level, okay? The preliminary stage of the first concentration level. What's that like? What happens to you in meditation when you reach nirdok, okay? You start to lose attraction for physical objects, for sense objects, and that's nirdok, okay? You start to lose attraction for gross physical objects, meaning you're overcoming your desire for food, you're overcoming your desire for sex, you're overcoming your desire for music or things like that. Your mind is reaching a higher level. Your mind is moving beyond that level. You actually, at certain levels, lose the ability to taste and smell. In those realms, they don't have, as a result, they don't have the smell consciousness or taste consciousness. There's no function there, because they are so gross and so rough that you've gone beyond that. So it's like where you're able to put your mind in a very fine state of meditation and where you're actually withdrawn from all the sense objects. You're not aware of colors. You're not aware of sounds. You know, people could be talking next to you. You wouldn't hear them. You have that ability to withdraw your mind inwards. And that's the nirdok. And some people mistake that for nirvana or something like that. You know, and some people get into that, which is another mistake. They think that because it feels so much better than food or physical, you know, pleasure, that they've reached some kind of nirvana or something like that. And that's another error, you know. That's a byproduct of this state of meditation. It's just a pleasant byproduct. It's not the goal. Why? You can't stay there. You always come out. When you come out, you're 3 hours older. And your body is 3 hours more painful, you know. And you keep that up and you just die. Okay, there's no meaningful result of that. You die a nice meditator. And that's not the goal.
Okay.
So that's what nirdok is. Nirdok is where you first reach that ability to go beyond the objects of the sense desire realm. Okay.
Michogme is just the name of this level. Michogme means, it's a very weird word. It means, what do we say? No lack of time. No lack of time. Now, I don't know exactly why it's called that, and I haven't seen an explanation. Chok means to have time to do something. Do you have time to go out tonight after the class? You say chokutu. I have chok. You know, mi chok means I don't have time. Mi chok me means I don't have no time. So, okay, it's no lack of time. Double negative. Mi chok me. Okay, that's just the name of that level. Mi chok me. Okay, I haven't seen a good explanation of why it's called that. Anyway, you must be able to reach this level if you want to see emptiness directly. And the implication is you have to be so good at meditating that you have to be able to withdraw completely from this realm. And the day that you see emptiness directly, you will actually have a feeling of being in a higher realm. I mean, before you see emptiness directly, your mind rises to a higher level of existence, like some kind of different realm. And when you stop seeing emptiness directly and that experience is finished, you have a sensation of descending from that, of coming out of that meditation, coming down out of that meditation. But you must be able to get into that state if you want to see emptiness directly. That takes about an hour to 2 hours of practice a day, period, every day. Okay? If you want to disqualify yourself forever from seeing emptiness directly and thereby waste your whole life and ruin the chance that you have in this life of ever getting out of this suffering, then don't meditate for an hour a day. Find some excuse to not do it. You're too busy. You know, you have to do other things. But when the day that you die, those other things become totally meaningless. And you can't even remember what they were. It's like last week's Sunday Times, you know, and it won't mean anything. You must be able to reach this state. You must have it as one of your lifetime's goals. Really, this should be the most important goal of your life, probably. I mean, you probably should have like 3 goals in your life, and this is one of them, to be able to get into this state of meditation. The shamatha, that form of shamatha, this particular level of shamatha. And if you can't do it, you'll never see emptiness directly, and you will have wasted a human life. Okay. Okay. We have an English, the shamatha definition. That's a translation of what you already had in Tibetan. That single-mindedness, which is imbued with the exceptional bliss of, I call it practiced ease. Okay. It's a good feeling that comes from practicing all the time. Practiced ease. Okay. Due to deep single-pointed meditation on a subject. I don't mind if you guys find a better word for Shinjang. Shinjang means you do it so much, you practice it so much, that you get really good at it. Okay? I'll say it out loud, okay? Definition of shamatha in English, that single-mindedness which is imbued with the exceptional bliss of practiced ease due to deep single-pointed meditation on a subject. Definition of vipassana, or insight, is that wisdom which is full of the exceptional bliss of practiced ease by power of the analysis of its object and which is founded upon quietude, or founded upon shamatha. Okay. This is more talking about the kind of meditation you need to see emptiness. That's been our theme. Let's go on to the other one, okay? I like to call it office meditation. All right? And this, the presentation I'm going to give, which is going to be a 4-minute presentation about, is based on the Bodhisattva vow, which says what? You break this Bodhisattva vow if you don't samdhim dipapongmicha. If you don't eliminate, if you are not actively during your day working to eliminate these 5 obstacles to meditation, you have broken your Bodhisattva vow. It's interesting, okay? If you are not actively trying to avoid 5 obstacles to meditation during the day, you have broken that Bodhisattva vow, okay? And that's where you get the presentation. Where do they get these obstacles? There's 5 obstacles. They were presented by somebody named Ludup. What's
Parpaludup, Nagarjuna, okay? Sometimes called the second Buddha, the greatest early Sanskrit writer, okay? 3rd century, 200 AD. And he wrote a book called, he was called Arya Nagarjuna. Apparently he saw emptiness directly. And he wrote a book called Shitting. Shitting means the letter to a friend, his friend, who was a king. And this was this relationship that great Buddhist philosophers used to have in ancient India. I think because of the karmic connection, you know. One person had seen emptiness directly. The other person had done this karma to be the wealthiest person in the country. And those two kinds of karma are very similar in a way. And they attract each other. And some of the greatest teachings of ancient India, and especially the tantric teachings, occurred between people who were attracted in that manner. You know, a person of great wealth would be attracted to a person who had seen emptiness because of the similar karma required. And they would start to interact. And out of that interaction came some great teachings that we still have. They are in a separate section of the Tengyur. They are correspondence between these figures and also personal teachings that were given, like Milinda Pinda is the questions of King Manendra, a Greek king of Kashmir, who met a Buddhist pandit, and the interchange between them is very beautiful. And Tantra rose through this process. Okay. Anyway, in this letter, which Art has translated, and it's been published, there's a verse about the five obstacles. Okay. And I'll give you the verse. And then that's the last major thing. I'll tell you a few stories. Okay, this is from Nagarjuna's letter to his friend, King Udaibada, or something like that. Say, Gudang, Gudang, Nesem, Mukpa, Dang, Nidang, Dula, Dundang, Tetsom, Te, Jepa, Ngapo. Okay. Gu is the one we talked about tonight about chimpanzees. Gu means your mind. This is our main problem. This is what ruins your meditation. It's when you sit down, and for me, it's going over all the projects I'm going to do today. You know, like, I have an appointment at such and such a time. I have to meet such and such a person. And it's often, it's your mind jumping around to things that you like. You know, I have to do this. I'm going to, oh man, am I going to, boy, I get to translate that verse today, and then I'm going to go over there and work on the computer thing, and then I'm going to go over and meet these nice people for lunch, and after that we'll do this, and that's gupa. Gupa is your mind is jumping around. I like to call it restless desire. Okay, it's a restless state of desire. It's actually desire. Okay, it can be virtuous objects like translating and meeting your Dharma friends, but it's still ruining your meditation. By the way, rule of meditation. Once you have chosen an object, if you switch to another object during that meditation session, uncontrollably, even if that object is virtuous, it's a bad deed. Okay? Like if you start thinking about all the nice things you're going to do for Rinpoche while you're supposed to be visualizing, you know, Vajrasattva or something, even though that's an extraordinarily virtuous thing to think about, it's a bad deed when you're meditating. Whoa, okay. Okay. It ruins your meditation, okay. Maybe say it's the same thing, I don't know. Okay. Gya is counted with gupa, okay. They are joined together. This is one obstacle. Gya and gya are joined together. Okay, so that's really obstacle number one is gu plus gu. Gu means, normally it means regret. For example, the second of the four powers of confession is called gu. But this has nothing to do with gu, okay? It's a translation of a Sanskrit word that means to, what do you call it? Daydream about the old days, okay? Oh, I remember this girlfriend I had, you know. I remember when I used to weightlift, you know. I remember when I had all my hair, you know. And not to be here now, okay, but to live in the past, you know, or to live somewhere else. Your mind is outside wandering around missing something. Oh, you know, I wish so-and-so was here with me. You know, and that's a very typical kind of distraction. It's very, very typical. If you meditate, if you try to do a long-term retreat, you'll find that this comes up automatically. You start to live in the outside. You start to live again the last 5 years of your life. And thinking about all the things you did and people you'd like to have seen and movies you saw and stuff like that. That's called jhopa in this case, only in this case, okay?
Nisim, which is this one, is said to be less frequent and much more destructive.
Nisim is malice. Okay, how did we do that? Let's see.
Nisim we translated as feelings of malice. Thinking that you'd like to hurt somebody. It's like anger. Okay?
Like it's not as frequent as desire. Desire ruins your meditation about 80% of the time. Anger or pure thoughts of wanting to hurt someone else. Thinking about the husband you divorced last year. Okay? Just totally ruins your meditation. I mean, a few seconds of this one, although it's much less frequent, destroys your meditation totally. If you're in retreat and you get one of these, I can tell you, because I did it all the time, it ruins your meditation sometimes for hours or even days. You know, if you get obsessing on someone you don't like during meditation, it'll destroy your meditation totally. Even though it's much less frequent than thinking about all the projects you like, you know.
Okay. Nisim. Mukpa and Ni are together. And that's why this verse is a little tricky. Mukpa and Ni go together. Mukpa, the Tibetan word for fog, is Mukpa. Okay? And here it's, you can say dullness. Okay? A kind of dullness, mental dullness.
Mukpa, if you want to know what mukpa's like, have two pieces of pizza and a couple of mugs of Two Boots root beer, and then go sit down and try to meditate, and you'll encounter mukpa. And mukpa is just, your mind is just not fit to meditate because of your body, you know, and it's just a kind of dullness and like that. Sugar is good for that, you know, eat a couple cookies before you meditate. Speaking from experience. Okay. Ni is drowsiness. Classically, it means to sleep. But in this case, it means drowsiness. You cannot meditate if you do not get enough sleep. Forget it. You will never be able to meditate if you don't get enough sleep. Okay? You have to have enough sleep. It'll ruin your meditation. You just can't do it. It doesn't matter how much you want to do it or how good you are at it or how good the circumstances are, or the place can be beautiful and wonderful, but if you didn't get enough sleep, you cannot meditate. And it won't work. And if you try it, you'll know. Okay? I'm very good at that, too. Okay? Ni. Say, Dipala Dumba. Dipala Dumba means an attraction for the objects of the senses. Okay?
Dipala.
Here it's Dula Dumba. Okay. Typically it's Dula Dumba. He's trying to make meter. Dula Dumba means an attraction to the objects of the senses. If you're thinking about music, if you're thinking about food, if you're thinking about sex, you can't meditate. It'll ruin your meditation. Okay? And those are all classified as attraction to the objects of senses. And if you're living in that realm, and the more you live in that realm, and the more you concentrate on that realm, you know, the more you think about food, the more you think about those other objects, it'll ruin your meditation. You just won't be able to go into a deep state of meditation. Can't do it. Okay? That's number four. Number five is tetsom. Tetsom means doubts. Doubts. Now, in Buddhism, there's good doubt and bad doubt. Okay? Good doubt is, you've been up there talking about future lives. You've been up there talking about hell realms. You've been up there talking about why God doesn't exist, you know. I think your arguments are pretty good, but I'm not convinced yet. And being a good Buddhist, I'm going to wait until it seems reasonable to me. So I choose to put that on the shelf. That's the instructions of Maitreya. He says, that's perfect. A good Buddhist shouldn't accept anything until they figured it out clearly themselves. But then there's this other kind of doubt where you just don't feel like accepting that thing. You know, somebody presents it to you very convincingly, very properly. You know you're supposed to be meditating for an hour and a day. And you wake up in the morning and you're like, I don't know if I have time, you know. I just can't. Gee, I don't know if I should do it, you know. I don't know. That's just crummy doubt, okay? That's the obstacle to meditation. Tetsum here is crummy doubt, all right? It's just wimpiness or not being able to make up your mind that you, of course you should do it. And it's not because of a philosophical problem you have with meditating. It's because you're lazy. And so you're not sure if you should get up early and do it. And that's tetsum, okay? Those five are an obstacle to meditation. What kind of meditation? Very clear in Jetsun Kapa's explanation of the Bodhisattva vows. He says, I ain't talking about deep shamatha meditation as much as I'm talking about maintaining a level, a meditative state of mind during the day. Okay? And what it means is, and I think you see it like in business, like certain business executives I've seen in business, they have meditation. They have the ability to keep a meditative state all day. I've seen it. Like, my boss is sort of like that. And although all the jokes I make about him, I have never seen him raise his voice at an employee. Okay? And we were talking about it the other day. We had dinner the other day. I've never seen him really angry. My little boss comes in and screams at me. Okay? That's the one that we're doing the emptiness on. But the big boss, because he's the big boss, I guess. I mean, that's why he's the big boss. I've never seen him get angry. He has this total ability to avoid nesam. And it's absolutely one focused, single-mindedly on money. Doesn't care about girls, doesn't care about golf, you know, doesn't care about being famous. Just wants money, you know. Single-pointedly. Gets enough sleep, I guess. Dipala Dumba, you know, is really not attracted to food or other objects like that. Could care less. Seen him go 24 hours on little cubes of sugar, you know. And doesn't have any doubt about what he's doing. I mean, he believes that what he's doing is what he wants to do. And that, I mean, that's what I'm trying to say is that you seek secondarily to maintain a state of meditation throughout the entire day. It means you can never have so much pizza that you can't think clearly. Okay? Not just meditating. Nagarjuna is very clear. Jetsun Kapa is very clear. We're talking all day long. You know, you have to avoid these five obstacles all day long. And you have to keep your mind bright-eyed and bushy-tailed from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to sleep. And that's very hard. You know, that's very hard. But learning to do that allows you, when you go into meditation and retreat, and when you do your deep meditations, you pop right into it. You know. By the way, this one is also very good for problem solving at work. And it's also very good for just plain success. I mean, if you have the ability to focus your mind like this, it's good for you. You can do anything. You can do any project you want to. You can do anything you want if you have this state of mind. You must avoid these five things all throughout the day. If you've taken Bodhisattva vows, you're under vows to do that. And you goddamn well better know them. You know, you're supposed to know these five. You're supposed to be watching them all the time. You know, and when do you report that you failed? Tundruk. Okay? That's what Tundruk is. If you don't know what Tundruk is, don't worry about it. If you're reciting Tundruk, stop reciting it. No, I'm not kidding. Okay? And start thinking about it. Okay, and as part of Tundruk, you're supposed to watch, check these five. How many times a day? Dhruk. Tundruk. Okay, you're supposed to be checking in on these five, six times a day. Okay, that's hard. Okay, but anyway, do it. What I'm trying to say is get into a meditative state of mind all day. And when you sit down, go into a deeper one. Okay. And avoid these five things all day long. That's what Master Shantideva is talking about. The whole chapter is how to maintain meditation 24 hours a day. And that's what the goal is. Okay? All right. couple of light things, okay? And then we'll start. Master Shantideva gets into, there's a long section in this chapter on men and women, you know, relations between the opposite sexes, which he considers and which is one of the major distractions that ruins your meditation. Okay, it ruins your ability to meditate. And he goes into a long, long analysis of, is this something beneficial or not? Does it help your meditation or not? What is the whole thing about? And I chose one rather long verse, which will be in your reading when you get it. And I kind of like one section he has. The homework question says, relate five ways Master Shantideva describes for courting those of the opposite sex. And then describe the attitude that might be appropriate once you have succeeded in courting someone from the opposite sex. Okay? So he describes the five methods, okay? Number one, go and beg them to have a relationship with you, you know? Keep going to them and asking them, you know, please go out with me, you know, you're the most beautiful person I ever met, and I must go out with you, okay? Go and make a fool out of yourself, okay? Number two, avoid no bad deed in seeking to attract them, you know? Avoid no bad deed in seeking to attract this person. If you don't have enough money, do something bad to get the money that you need, you know? Do whatever bad deed you have to get this person. You're getting, this is negative advice, okay? Go after these people and don't worry about what anybody says. Number four, engage in any kind of reckless or dangerous behavior to get them, okay? I don't know what that means, but I guess showing off in your car or something. She said AIDS. That's true, too. Okay. Number five, use up all your money and other resources in order to capture this person. Okay? Like, waste all your money on buying them nice things and stuff like that. Okay? In order to attract them. Then he describes the proper attitude you should have after you get them. Okay? And it's very, very beautiful. And I'm like, this is a direct translation, pretty much direct translation. I'll just read it, okay? She finally comes to your house. As you lift the silken veil from her face and look into her gentle, loving eyes. By the way, if you're a woman, you can switch it, okay? We're not being sexist here. Think of how this same face is going to lie rotting under the death shroud. And the birds of prey will come to the burial ground to lift the veil that she so gently lifts for you now. And then you will know how she really looks. And you will run away as fast as your legs can carry. And it means this. I mean, you know, you go through so much to get this person. And when they reveal their beautiful body to you, you know, finally, here's the day, you know. And when you look at it, if you're smart, if you know what you're doing, you see the dead body, and you see the maggots crawling on it, and the flies eating it, and really, I mean seriously, all those efforts, wasting your time, wasting your life, wasting your money, wasting your reputation, you know, wasting your pride, what's the benefit, you know, what's the goal? What is it that you have finally accomplished? It's a skeleton. It's a dead body, you know. It's a body which is rotting. You know, it's going to sit there and rot in the cemetery. And then the guy that Shantideva is talking to, Master Shantideva, they object. They say, okay, I know she's going to die in 20 years or 50 years or something. But right now she's warm and nice and smells good and everything, you know. And then he goes into a long analysis of whether that's true or not. But basically, it takes a lot of imagination. And it takes a lot of brainwashing from your culture and from the Madison Avenue executives not to see the truth that this is a normal, old, mortal, dying, suffering piece of bag of flesh, you know. And it takes constant brainwashing from television and movies and Calvin Klein to imagine that it's anything else. You know, and to be attracted to it in that way, it takes a lot of, you have to buy a lot of special clothes and cosmetics and stuff, and you have to do all sorts of weird things to package it so it looks attractive, because it's not. and it's going to die, and it's suffering. And they're suffering while you're looking at them, and you're suffering while you're looking at them. And try, Master Shanti Deva says, cut the crap and go after nirvana. You know, both of you. You know, just stop that kind of behavior. It doesn't help anything. And try to get enlightened. And then you'll both be very happy. You know, and that's the bottom line about relationships. And he has a lot about it. Okay? It doesn't do any good to have this kind of relationship with another person. They are going to suffer. And you're going to suffer. And not because it's evil or bad or dirty or anything like that. Just because that's the nature of the body. And they are dying. And you're dying. So do something meaningful. You know, while you're with them, you know, go meditate with your girlfriend and achieve enlightenment with them. And then that's something meaningful. You know, that's something helpful. The rest is just fooling yourself, and it's two people who are dying, just wasting each other's time. Okay? Like that. Last thing, he talks about money. He has a long section on money. Okay? And there's a cute verse where he says, if you don't dedicate your younger years to the pursuit of money, you won't have any big amount to enjoy when you get older. Okay? Like, you have to start around, I can tell you, you know, you need to start around 25 to 30 if you want to make big bucks. Normally. I mean, if you happen to be a movie star or something, that's an exception. But a normal business person who wants to make serious money, you have to start 25 to 30, and you have to put 10 to 20 years into it of your heart. You know, 18 hours a day. Must. And don't think of anything. That's how you succeed in business. I mean, the rest is all fantasy. It doesn't exist. You know, it's hard work for 10 to 15 years. Then he says, if you do dedicate your younger years to the pursuit of money, then you'll be too exhausted by the time you get it to enjoy it. And you can observe that in real life, you know. Who has the Lincolns? It's these old guys who can't appreciate them, you know, or can't do anything with them, you know. And if you don't go to work like that when you're young, you'll never get the Lincoln. So you get the Lincoln to impress the girls, but by the time you get it, you're too old and exhausted to do anything with it, you know. And I used to think that all the time. And then Shantideva, actually, there's a verse like that. He describes it. You can read it. I'll read one more verse, okay? Then we'll stop. English for the five obstacles are, and it'd be nice if on your homework, if you memorize the verse, okay? Three lines of verse, okay? One line, two lines, three lines. This is actually the second half of the line before, okay? The other thing's a long story, and I think we'll leave it. But basically, there's a beautiful couple of verses about, he describes the life of a working man. You know, and he says, you know, you want money for your house and your mortgage and everything else, and you go out to work and you spend your precious body and you waste your precious body, and then you come home and flop it into bed like a corpse. And he goes on like that, and it just very well described my corporate life. And I'll translate it. We'll have it for you next class, okay? So basically, thinking about the chapter of meditation in those terms. Meditation throughout the day. Don't think it has to be sitting on a cushion. It's to maintain a bright, bushy-tailed state of mind all day, and it's your responsibility to do it, which means you can't eat badly. You have to get enough rest. You have to try to avoid objects of the senses, and you have to try to make up your mind that that's what you want to do. And you have to avoid thinking about other people in an angry or bad way. And that way you'll be able to steer your mind through the day, avoiding those two extremes of getting too hyper and getting too dull. And your mind has to go between them, and you have to remain in that state of meditation all day. It's a bodhisattva responsibility. And then when the time, every day at a certain time, and then in long-term retreats, you have to undertake deep meditation. The first kind of meditation prevents your mind from getting mental afflictions that make you screw up your life. The second state of meditation, which is the deep one, removes the cause of the mental afflictions, which is seeing things as self-existent. It allows you to see emptiness. So you need meditation for both. So the point is that you're going to be meditating all day long, and then in retreat or in your morning sessions or evening sessions, you're going to be going into deep states of meditation. And you have to learn both. And that's going to be the subject of the matter of this chapter.
Namba gunye do ban shou.